Welcome back to another episode of After Hours with Amanda. If you are new here, welcome. This is a podcast that is for everyone about so many things, just journeying life. If you're not new here, hi. we are diving into, I'm actually really nervous. We're diving into an episode today about grief. More specifically, we're going to talk about my brother. And this has been a request since I started this podcast and y'all found out about Adam probably 2020, like the year I started this podcast. And I have politely avoided it in the sense of it's a very, very, very delicate subject. One, two, grief is so unique for everybody. The journey is so different. Two people can lose the same person in a sense, relationship wise, like a mom or a mom. And the experience that you have from that is so unique and different. And so it makes grief very hard to navigate, because while navigating it, you're also navigating how you would navigate something. So we're going to dive into that. It is a busy week around here. I'm so excited. We have spring break in literally what I would consider now 2.5 days, because the school day is almost over. And I could not be happier. And everyone keeps going, are you going anywhere for spring break? No, absolutely not. My goal is to do as little as possible besides going to see Kung Fu Panda 4. I love the Kung Fu Panda series. So I always still, that saying, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, today is a gift. That's why it's called a present. The amount of times I use that. Okay. So I could not be happier about that. It's wild. I can't do like a fluffy introduction today or like talk about random things, because we are talking about something. Another thing is I'll give a little background on Adam. For those of you that are new here and don't know anything about that relationship, but I just want to say that today what I'm sharing is my personal experience, what that was like through my lens, and what I have found is tricky, helpful, hard, confusing, and the fact that everything is still super unknown, because I might have done grief yesterday, but I haven't done it today. And the fact that that is literally the definition of grief. And I do love that saying when people say that grief is just the love that you can't give to the person anymore. But I also don't love that saying, if I'm being honest with you, because it makes it feel like it should be something that you really love and treasure, when actually it's super painful. And I know that that's supposed to bring you peace. And I understand the thought of that. And it's even something that I share to calm myself when I am feeling so overwhelmed. But it is also okay that if when someone says that, you think, no, it's grief. It doesn't feel like love. This is not what love feels like. And if it's kind of hard to kind of like process that in a sense and accept that at face value, because telling someone that the thing that feels hurtful is love can be extremely confusing. So with that statement, of course, it's always meant in love to tell you that it's okay. But if it feels like a double-edged sword, you are not alone. So I just want to get that out there. I'm not hating on that saying, you guys. I am just telling you that if it doesn't bring you a lot of peace and clarity and like calm, like validation, that's okay too. So let's jump right in. It's really quiet in my room. And when it's not quiet, I honestly wish I could have like the TV or music on, but I don't want it to pull from the mic and have really bad background noise. So to give a little background on those of you that don't know, Adam passed away in September, a week before my birthday in 2019. So right before 2020, which if I could honestly say anything about his passing in that time, one, no, it is devastating to have that the week before your birthday. And two, I actually was relieved because of the way that that next year went and where he was at with his mental health and his battles and his struggles and his victories and his, you know, trials. I feel like I'm just glad he didn't have to endure more isolation than he already personally felt. And so some days when I'm having a hard time, that's the piece that I put in my mind. I put in my mind that at least that wasn't for him endured, because I just can't imagine how hard it would have been for him to navigate. So a little bit about Adam. He was my older brother by 2 years, technically 23 months. Technically 23 months. He's not 2 years older than me. He was 23 months. And he was an absolute older brother. Like, I can't describe that more. He was an older brother, but he didn't get like typical older brother till high school. When I was younger, he was very much like, he would lay my clothes out and put them by the heater in the morning, and he would always want a hug. And I was the little sister that was like, not a hugger. Like, no, I'm not giving you a hug. You know what I mean? Like, so we grew up with a good sibling relationship. There wasn't anything insane there. Around age 13, we were living in Los Angeles at the time. Adam started hanging out with a group of friends that my mom wasn't like totally sure about, but she wanted to be open. And Adam was 13, so she wanted to, you know, give a little bit of freedom without giving too much, because you want to like slowly increment that independence so they don't go out at 18 having no independence, not knowing how to navigate anything. And this was Adam's introduction into substances. And it started out very casual, is how I'll put it, because I'm not going to get into the conversation that people always want to have about this substance or that substance or the usage of it. Bottom line, he got into substances. Substances that alter the chemistry in your brain and kind of change how you would act as a person. This started out very simple and was not a huge issue. It wasn't, and it didn't really plague him, right? Like, he was a typical teenager at this point, having outbursts, frustrations, different things like that. And I'm not going to go into all of his life because obviously he's not here. And I just feel like that's not all my business to share. But what did happen was when he was about 15 or 16, he suffered a football injury that led him to take Oxycontin. I'm just going to let that sit there for a second. And for anybody that knows anything about that drug, you already know where I'm going with this. The amount of things that I could say when that is mentioned, that drug is mentioned, and I don't care who you are, to me, I literally like, nope, nope, nope. I went through 3 pregnancies. I've been through 1, 2, 3, 4 surgeries. I will never take, I don't take anything. I take Tylenol. And that's to each his own. Everyone's personality is different. Coming from a family that has dealt with addiction in so many different forms, I steer away from it. But I would just never recommend Oxy to anybody. Absolutely no one ever. I have never seen anything good from it. And I'm not hating on you if you have taken it for a need or a surgery or pain or something, and it has been helpful to you in your life. That is absolutely fine. That is not the case here. This is where Adam's addiction started, and this was where it absolutely took a huge, huge nosedive. We were in high school, and I get asked a lot of times, are you angry at Adam? Do you feel like your parents focused so much on him because he wasn't, and everybody really wants to make it this like attention grab of comparison. And in all honesty, I have never felt like, wow, I wish I had gotten more attention than Adam, because watching him navigate life was so devastating as a sibling. I can't even begin to describe it to you. I cannot describe to you what it feels like to sit and drop a sibling off at a group home where they are staying because they're no longer living with you, where they are no longer the person that you grew up with, where they have become a completely other person, and you're leaving them in this place that you don't know. And the most exciting thing that happened to them that week was when you dropped off KFC. I cannot tell you about the light that leaves someone's eyes and the hopelessness that that creates. What I can tell you as a sibling of someone with addiction who passed away from it is I can tell you that, honestly, I wish I would have had a little different perspective. I watched a series, and I can't think of the name now because my brain is just flooded with so much emotion and thought. Maybe it'll come to me while I'm doing this. Or maybe you saw it. It was on Netflix or Hulu, and it was specifically focused on Oxycontin. I'm going to want to look this up. And I can't think of it now, but something in that series that they talked about, first off, if you are going to watch this, I'm absolutely giving a trigger warning. I have watched so many things like on addiction. I've watched all the shows on A&E. I've watched all the documentaries. I've watched all of those things, all the intervention. I literally watched Intervention like it was going out of style. I've seen every episode, every season since that show's been out. Like, since I could watch it, I've watched it. And I can tell you that nothing, literally nothing, perfectly displayed what it looked like in my house than episode 3 of this series, this limited series that they did, focusing on the Purdue family and OxyContin and how it tore up a whole town and a doctor while it was at it. And something I didn't understand was, and people can say what they want, I think what's really hard about loving an addict is you can never be right. If you're loving them too much, you're enabling them. And if you're not holding them accountable, you're not supporting them. And it's so hard and it's such a nuanced thing. And it's so black and white for some people. Well, they don't want to change. Well, they don't want it enough. Well, they don't care. Well, they don't this. And that on so many levels, I'm not saying don't hold it accountable. I'm not saying that that's not true. But what I'm saying with grief is it's so confusing. It's so confusing when you lose someone to addiction, whether they went into addiction. Adam was not in addiction at the time when he passed away. His body could not continue with the effects that it had suffered in his addiction. And that was what ultimately took him from us. His body gave out. Literally, he dropped dead. Standing outside, smoking a cigarette in front of my parents' house, dropped dead. Like, he was making mac and cheese. Like, and the problem with it is when someone you love dies because of addiction, it's so confusing. It's confusing because grief is hard in general. And my mom's story with grief is totally separate. It's a whole other experience because there are things that are very nuanced with that. But what I'm talking about today is just the idea of addiction. And one thing I wish I had understood about it is I wish I had understood that the minute that addiction takes place, the minute that something like that alters your brain chemistry, a new neural pathway is driven. And the amount of things that I've read about this now and the research that I've done into it has made me such, for me personally, this was something I wanted to do. So if you're dealing with an addict in your life who has caused you a ton of pain, I want to say this to you right now. Your feelings are valid. Your boundaries are valid. The protection. I had strict rules when it came to my brother in terms of boundaries with my girls and my family. There were reasons, and he did not know where we lived. He only could visit with certain stipulations met. I would always take a phone call if it was one that was within the boundaries of the relationship that I had laid out. And when he wanted help, I was willing to help. But the manipulation side of things, like that's, I don't want you to hear what I'm not saying with this, okay? Because I know that there are so many, and here's the thing, in addiction, being lied to, being stolen from, like that all happened with my brother. Like that all happened. That's not to erase what happened or the wrongs he did. What I am saying is that you also have to realize that the person that was there is no longer there and will never be. And that, what's so weird about it is it's almost as if the addict dies before they die. Does that make sense? See, what's so hard about loving an addict and then them dying is you've already mourned them once and then you mourn them again. But you mourn them almost knowing that you were going to mourn them. See, because when an addict passes away, there's a physical death that takes place, but an emotional death has already taken place on some level. And you're not only grieving what was, you're grieving what could have been, and then you're grieving what would never have been because you were always waiting for the call. You were always waiting for the phone call. And people who haven't gone through that don't understand that. It is as if you have loved another person and trying to explain that to someone when they've only met the addict is impossible. See, I think what's really hard about the grief that I feel with Adam and what I've had to come to terms with is who I knew is not who everyone knew. The little boy that pretended to be Peter Pan, the little boy that did karaoke to The Lion King with me, the brother who went to Disneyland with me, the brother who cheered me, like, he ceased to exist. And I never realized that because I kept saying, I can't wait for the old Adam to come back. And what I didn't realize was he was never going to. See, the thing that I wanted was the different version, in a sense. When I realized that he wasn't coming back, I just wanted him well. And I was okay with him being different and looking different and our relationship being different. But that was also hard. Because when you've grown up with a sibling, you know them, you know who they are, right? So if they turn into another person halfway through your life with them, you have to get to know them again. It's extremely confusing. And no one talks about that. See, it's so easy to say, well, have accountability and cut that person off and go no contact. And I did all that. Let me tell you right now, I did all that. I did the tough love. I did the you can't do this. I'm not sending you money. Don't show up here. I did all that. But what's so hard about the grief is that you are bearing the burden of feeling like someone you love thinks you hate them because they're not there. They are not thinking in a space that they understand that, because the only thing that their body is craving is whatever that addiction is. They are not in their right mind. They are not there. No one is home. And I'm not shirking responsibility for that. And I know this is probably going to ruffle a few feathers with this. I'm not saying they don't have responsibility in that. I am saying that on some level, they are incapable. The amount that their body and their brain is literally going, it is a chemical reaction that takes place. It is incredibly difficult. I have days sometimes where I know I need to fold the laundry, but I'm going to sit and watch a show anyways and know that is life, not life or death. And that doesn't really impact anyone on a huge level. But when you're dealing with grief with an addict, people feel like you should be like, well, that was their choice. They made their choice. Oh God, the saying, they made their bed, now lie in it. It was like my grandmother's favorite line. It used to drive me nuts. And for so long, and this is a story for another time, I really believed that the choices that I made had put me in a place that I deserved because I made the choices. And that is a lie from the pit of hell. Let me tell you right now, the whole, you made your bed and you can lie in it now. No, that's not true. You can pick up at any time, wrap that bed up, toss it out, and go walk a new way. I do not believe that if you are in a place, because I was in a place, really quick segue, in college where I was so deep in a life I was not happy with. And I really thought, well, Amanda, you deserve this. You made these choices. This is your bed. You have to lie in it. This is your life now. This is what you have to endure. And that's not true. You can change it. You just have to believe in yourself that you love you enough to say, you know what, actually, no, I don't deserve this. I can change my mind. I can change what I've done. I can change the choices that I'm making, and I can do something different. And if people want to judge me for that, judge me for that. I've made some mistakes. I'll make some more. But that doesn't mean that I can't blaze a new trail. Okay? You can. And I think that the thing that's really difficult when it comes to grief and addiction is there's a lot of shame attached to it. And I won't even get into this on this episode, because the amount that I love the big guy upstairs, Jesus and I, we have a relationship, right? It's between him and I. So it's not one that you need. And I believe that it's between him and you. So it's not one that you have to explain or make good on or prove to anybody. Because at the end of the day, that's who you're checking in with. But the amount of shame in the church that is attached to addiction, the amount of judgment that people look at, and it frosts my cookies, y'all. Because I'm like, I say this all the time, the church is a hospital, not a courthouse, not a jury room. God doesn't need juries, okay? God doesn't need you to be a juror. He's not going to summon you for jury duty. It's not your job to judge. It's your job to go into the hospital and to welcome people in and to tell them that there is healing and that there is love and that there is light, and here's some things that we can do to help. But the amount of jury rooms that exist are without. And the fact that my brother felt like he couldn't even enter into a space that he was once so welcomed in and loved as a child, to this day, still kills me. There are some days that I talk to God and I'm like, man, how could a child who grew up loving you feel so displaced by you? And then I remember, it wasn't Jesus. It was people that claimed to know him. And that's not to say that I don't make mistakes and I'm not the best representation of Christ's love always. Definitely not. Definitely have my days. Make mistakes all the time. I'm sure there's probably a list that someone out in the world could be like, oh, let me tell you about Amanda. Let me tell you about Amanda. She's XYZ. And I would be like, oh, well, probably that could be true. That probably happened. Yeah, I probably did that, because I'm not ashamed of the fact that I've come a long way and I'm a different person. I'm not ashamed of the fact that I've made mistakes, because that's the entire point of our existence. We were never made to be perfect. We were never made to be blameless. There was one person who did that, okay? It's not my job. But the frustration that I have felt in sometimes myself going to church, understanding that there are so many people that just stand in judgment as if someone is weak, and then they see your grief and they're like, I know, but the choices that you made, and it's like, someone is still not here. See, because here's the thing. I want you just to remember this. No matter what you're dealing with in life, everyone comes into this world as a little baby. Not knowing anything, not experiencing anything, not being aware of anything. And when I became a mom, oh my gosh, talking about this makes me a little nauseous. I'm going to take a sip of water because this is just a lot. We're processing this together, you guys, but I just feel like it's important to share this because you need to know that if there's an addict that you love or loved, that like, it's okay, so hold on. Sharing is caring, friends. Becoming a mom and going through the birthing process, whatever that looks like for you, but having a baby placed in your hands, whether through birth, adoption, whatever you want to say, having a baby, when I had my daughters put in my hands, there was this knowing that was scary and exciting all at the same time. This knowing that they hadn't been through anything yet and that you could give them this experience of love. And then this knowing that they were going to experience things that you couldn't prevent, that were out of your control. And no matter how much you love them or do or tell them, that they're still going to experience that. And I can't tell you what it's like with three daughters right now to watch them experience things that I wish they didn't with friends, the environment, family, all of the above, just the things that they navigate. And being like, man, we haven't gotten past this yet. Man, we can't skip over that for them. And when I was pregnant, even though I really thought that I might have a little boy at one point, every time they said it was a girl, I feel really guilty about this. I was so relieved. I was so relieved every time they told me it was a girl, because the fear that I had, that if I had a little boy, he might suffer what Adam did in the addiction and stuff, was so overwhelming. And so many people would make me feel guilty about that. And here's the thing. Just because you have a daughter or a son and that correlates to someone in your life, it does not mean that they are going to have the same experience. And that was something that I learned over time. But the guilt that I felt, for even thinking that, and the shame that I felt for thinking that. But I couldn't help but not think that, because I had seen the struggle. The first time Adam entered into a substance at 13 and then full-blown addiction at 15. And he passed away. And I'm going to have to calculate the age now because it's so out of the realm of my mind. I'm 37, 39. So I turned 38 this year. He would have turned 40. He literally had that many years of addiction from the age of 15 to 36. It's 21 years of addiction. 21 years of his life, over half of him alive, were spent in addiction and being a sibling to that. The amount of 5150s that were called, the amount of times we would go through the same thing. I spent my senior ball. I went, I got my hair done, I got my makeup done, and then we went to a family group therapy session at the halfway house he was at. And then I went to my senior prom. Those things leave scars, and I have no anger about them. And that's just the way that I have dealt with it, because the only thing I've ever felt was sadness. I think something else that was really hard was when you have someone in addiction and the grief that you feel when they're alive. See, because here's the thing for me, at least with grief with Adam, and this is why we're doing a separate episode on it for my mom, because I grieved for him while he was living. I feel so fortunate that the life that Blake and I have created and the tiny humans that are brought into this world and were gifted to us, that we have a really awesome life. I love our life. I love our house. I love our dogs. I love our weekends. I love driving to school. I love our holidays. I love our trips. And there's this real sadness when we would, on occasion, when Adam was in a good place, he would come to family gatherings, holidays. And my dad would bring him, you know, because he couldn't drive and he didn't have a car. And we were really fortunate that my dad always had a place for Adam. He was never homeless. I've had friends who have siblings who have been homeless through addiction. And I would be so happy for him there. And he was so great when he was there. You know, he would, the rules of that were he had to be clean for a certain amount of time. He couldn't be using substances. He couldn't, there were things that went along with him coming to the event because I had tiny people in my life and I had to protect them. And the blessing was my oldest and my second just had so many beautiful interactions with him. Well, they were real little. And Lennon still talks about it because she has photos and videos of it. Because he was a really great uncle when he could come. But the guilt that I would feel when I would leave those family functions, knowing that he was going back to being alone and by himself, and that there was nothing I could do for that. There wasn't. There really wasn't. We had done what we could. I did what I could when he was here and present. But it would always be really hard for me because after extreme happy joy at a family event, there would be such a letdown of emotions when I would get home. And Blake always knew it was coming. Bless that man. We would be in the car. He would see me. He would look at me. He'd be like, "We're almost home. I got you." And he would get the kids settled. And then I would just go into a spiel every time. Why can't it be like this? Why can't it be like this? This is what I thought would be. This is what, you know, and it's hard. I pictured, now I'm very blessed on Blake's side of the family. I have a sister-in-law, brother-in-law, and they have kids and I love them. And I feel extremely blessed to have nieces and nephews. But there was just something special about your sibling and thinking about what their kids would be like, right? And I don't know if anyone ever dreamed of this, thinking about who your sibling would be with and what their life would look like if they did have kids or what they would do in life. And like just those days and to grieve then this idea in your head of what would have been. It's almost like, you know, when you break up, you're in a relationship, right? And say it's a serious relationship and you really think it's going to go the distance. You really see yourself spending the rest of your life together. And then you've been together for years and then suddenly the relationship ends. It's almost like losing a limb. Because what you also lose with that is not just a relationship. Even if it was toxic, right? Even if it was willingly ended, even if it was mutually ended, there is a grieving that happens for what you had put in your mind of what might have been, what would have been, this highlight reel that gets played. And the thing is with grief of Adam is when I grieve him now, it's so hard because sometimes I'm so conflicted. I'm so at peace that he's not in pain. And then I feel guilty for feeling that he's at peace because it's then like, oh, well, you'd want him dead. But there is a peace that he's no longer in pain and addiction and suffering because of the mental illness that went along with that, the bipolar, the ADHD, at the end, mild schizophrenia. I'm so grateful that his little, I say little because I always viewed him as younger because that's how it is. People always talk about birth order, but they don't talk about just played out birth order where the older sibling is technically the younger sibling and the younger sibling takes on the role of the older sibling, if that makes more sense in the terms of like life roles where you are the more responsible one, even though you're the younger sister. And I always felt so protective of him. And so for him to be at rest and to not be feeling plagued anymore, the relief that I felt, it's so hard because addiction is so rampant And no one talks about it. No one shares with you about the addiction because there's so much shame that's carried with it. And the shame is always attached to something. Being in addiction is being in pain. Loving someone in addiction is painful. And again, don't hear what I'm not saying here. I am not saying that you can't be angry. I'm just telling you my experience, and I hope that it brings you something. I hope that me sharing this, me avoiding sharing this for 3 years, I hope that it brings you something today in terms of grief. Loving an addict is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do because at a very young age, I had to have a level of boundaries and accountability that I didn't want and didn't understand, but also had to have a level of love because I loved this person. Loving someone in addiction is so hard because for you, it's as simple as, wait, but just don't. Don't you see how amazing, or did you, and all of this, but them internalizing that belief is just not something that landed for at least us. Loving someone in addiction is terrifying because you don't know what might set it off. Who are you going to get today? It's a gamble. What is going to happen when you trust that they're going to go out with friends and come back? Are you going to get them back, or are you going to lose them all over again? Loving someone with addiction is so painful because it can be years and years and years, and it can still happen again. Because just like an ED, it is something that will always be in the car. It's just if it's in the passenger seat or the driver's seat. And the scary thing is, loving someone in addiction is being scared of what might set them off or send them back. And when you're dealing with that person that is not the person you know, that is that alternate, almost like a Jekyll and Hyde, that is terrifying. Because you don't know how they will react, what they will do. Grieving Adam after he passed was so hard because I felt like there was so much I didn't get to do. There's still so much guilt that I have to wade through because there's so many what ifs. And I saw this thing on Instagram this last week, and it said if a thought starts with a what if and it's a negative thought, it's an intrusive thought. There were so many days I wonder if when we were kids, if I had done X, if I had done this, if I had told this, if I had said this, how could I have stopped it? How could I have fixed it? How could I have remedied it? And the problem with that is loving someone in addiction is really hard because the responsibility is theirs. You can love them as much as you want. You can support them as much as you want. You can hold as many boundaries as you want. It does not mean that it is going to change the situation. But something that brought me peace was, I just remembered the name of the show, Dope Sick. Of course it came to me. Thank you. Probably him. Dope Sick. If you have someone you love, and I am giving a major trigger warning to this series, because I started this series and people had been like, oh, it's intense. And I was like, oh, whatever. I've seen everything on addiction. Literally unable. You can't even move me. I'm so... And we got to episode 3. Episode 3 was where I made it. And I literally started visibly shaking and crying uncontrollably and Blake had to turn it off. And it was several weeks before I could continue watching it. It was absolutely, and it was so unexpected because the way that they display a scene when the father takes the pills from the daughter, and that's not giving away anything in it, when he takes the pills from her, watching this play out, I thought they were in my kitchen as a child. It was the most real thing I've ever experienced, which was why it sent my entire nervous system into absolute spiral and peril because I literally, my body thought we were back where it was. See, there's so many things attached to grief. And that's why when people say, like I said in the beginning, grief is just the love you can't give. Grief is also the sadness you feel at what wasn't. Grief is also the anger you feel for what was. Grief is also the confusion you feel when you don't know what to do because yesterday was fine and today is not. Grief is also the fear of not knowing if something is going to set you off. Grief is also avoiding certain situations that you think could trigger you. It's an all-encompassing thing, but rather than let it dictate your entire life, with time, I think what I have learned to do is when it does enter in, not let it crush me beneath it, but rather say, you're here. What is your purpose? And what do I need in this moment? See, people who don't know the person that you love and only know the addict only judge the behavior they see. And I learned a long time ago to quit being really angry at people for that. Because I think your loss, you didn't know the brother that used to take my satin pillow in the summer because my grandmother would make us satin pillowcases every summer. You didn't know the brother that would find the air vent in our house and put it up against the air conditioning to make it cold. You didn't know the brother that taught me Super Mario in 64 and won all the stars. You don't know the brother who taught me how to power slide in Mario Kart. You don't know the brother who taught me that an elite combo is Milk Duds with popcorn. And that's your loss that you only knew the addict. That's your loss that you don't know the empathy that he had for other people. The way that this little boy would have given his shoes to someone without them. Grief with an addict is hard because it's almost as if you're not allowed to grieve who they were because they passed away as an addict. And I think that it's okay to tell yourself that you don't have to share that part of that person with anyone else. See, for me, grief with Adam has also been not talking about it when it's his birthday, because I don't want people having their opinion on it. See, what's really hard, for me at least, is I have such a different view of it. And so to share with him, to share him with someone, is to share something I think very precious. I always tell the girls this example when they ask me why I won't do something or why I have a certain expectation or rule as a parent or something. I say, they love, by the way, the tiny queens love snow globes. And one day I will show you, okay? And I'll post it on Insta, you know, a little if you know, you know. I have this snow globe from Disneyland that my parents bought me. The water has since drained out of it. I don't even know if it's fixable. But it plays When You Wish Upon a Star. It's the most beautiful snow globe. And if I could say one thing in this house besides my loved ones and my puppies, which I would, like, I'd say most, obviously the people, okay? I would let everything else in this house go, and I would get that snow globe. Over jewelry, over, I do not care, okay? Even the photo albums, because at the end of the day, all the memories that I have are in my heart. And I love photos, but I would say the snow globe. And so in turn, the tiny queens really love snow globes, like all of them. And catch me finding a snow globe. I have not bought one from Disneyland because nothing can compare to the one I own. And until one can get on the level of what I already have, like I'm like, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. That's not, we need that level of snow globe. Anyway, so I tell the girls when they say, I go, you love your snow globes, right? Yeah. Would you hand that snow globe over to someone and say, okay, take care of it and I'll see you in 24 hours or a week, but be really careful with it. And they're like, no, not unless I like really, really knew that they would take care of it in the way that I would take care of it. Me, that's my point. I think that so often we really feel like, and at least this is for me, so I'm not speaking for you. I feel like sometimes where there's this pressure when someone passes or leaves us to really commemorate their birthday or their favorite holiday. And some years I do this and some days I don't. I've really come to a great place in listening to myself when it comes around. But for example, the anniversary of their death. This can feel like if you don't share it, then you're not remembering them or they're going to be forgotten or it's not relevant. And I want to tell you right now that if sharing it doesn't feel like it is going to bring you a peace or a joy or some type of validation in your love for them, it is not you forgetting them. It is you preserving who they were to you. Because if someone is not going to handle that snow globe of a memory in the way that you would, you are allowed to preserve it for yourself, for the safety of that memory. And it doesn't mean that you've forgotten them. It means that you are keeping them safe from the judgment that they probably felt in life. I just refuse to let someone that I love be shamed even after their death. There were a lot of things Adam did as an addict that were painful and hurtful. And was it fair? No. Do I make excuses for it? No. Am I very, very open with my tiny queen? She's 10. She's going to be 11 soon. I share with her, and I will always share with them about Adam and his struggles, because so much of addiction is rooted in shame and secrecy that I just won't let it, I won't let it stand. We will bring it into the light. We will bring that into the light. And I think it's so important to educate them, because substances are so readily available. And I tell them, hey, look, this alters neural pathways. Hey, look, this changes who people are at their core. Hey, look, they're also still someone to someone. They are also someone's brother, someone's sister, someone's aunt, someone's uncle, someone's child. And they came into this world like a baby in the hospital. And I just remember when I was handed that baby, looking at it and thinking, this realization that even the people that annoy me in life, or I don't like, or whatever, or I haven't had a good interaction with, right? Maybe I met them on a bad day. That's what I tell myself. That they are loved by someone. There is a redeeming quality about them that somebody loves. And it's so easy to make people faceless and nameless when we don't want to, you know? It's so easy to look past someone. But the thing about grief is when I fill it with Adam, I have learned that I can't avoid it. His is coupled with so much stuff. It's added on, it's piled on in so many ways. I'm angry that he didn't believe me that everyone loved him. I'm frustrated that he isolated himself. I'm scared that that might happen to somebody else that I love. But I believe that the best way to grieve him is sharing about him, at least for me and his journey. And that doesn't always happen, and that's not always what I might want to do. But it is okay if someone passed away in a painful way or in the not most uplifting, right? They were in addiction when they passed away. It is still okay to celebrate them. It is still okay to love them. It's okay to be angry too. Okay? So don't hear what I'm not saying. As someone who has worked through a lot of grief with this, worked through a lot of pain with this, every day is new. And like I said, right now, this topic still makes me nauseous, because the amount of responsibility I feel talking about it, pressure that I feel, judgment I don't want others to feel, love I want you to feel, validation I want you to feel, the amount of things I want to convey to you. But grief is not linear. It is the most complex thing I've ever experienced in my whole life. And losing a mom and losing a brother, it's very, very conflicting. And thinking that you've lost one human and then losing the other would be somewhat similar is even more difficult, because it's so different. Grief is not linear. We are not linear humans. We're complex. And the emotions that go with that are as such. And there is no responsibility or a certain way that you should grieve. And if somebody is telling you that, don't. The stages of grief, stages of loss, I go through those cycles yearly, daily, on different months, weeks. Some days I don't feel them at all. You don't grieve and then you're done. And I think the thing is don't be afraid of that. Grieving is a journey that you will be on your whole life, because it will happen in different ways and it will catch you in different ways. But it's not something for you to fear. It's something for you to know is rooted in something, which is usually love. But that doesn't mean that the way that it feels is going to feel that way. That doesn't mean that you can't not like grief. That doesn't mean that you have to go through the stages or there are ways to do that. That doesn't mean you have to celebrate the person if you don't want to, or share the memory if you don't want to. I loved my brother's funeral. My mom's funeral, we did a typical funeral. People come, they sit in on a service. Then you have, you know, the afterwards of it. I hated it. I hated every minute of it. Because people who hadn't seen us in years and people who I knew absolutely actually did not enjoy my mom at all showed up. And it drove me insane. There was a moment at my mom's funeral when a woman walked up who I knew literally had to my mom's face said nothing kind. And I literally looked at her, I said, why are you here? Why? Some type of affirmation you need for yourself? And people can say what they want about that. They can say like, oh, maybe she wanted to make amends. No, I didn't need her there. And that was my prerogative as grieving, and I will not apologize for that. And some people were like, Amanda. And I was like, what? What do you want me to say? Thank you so much for coming. You weren't kind to her in life. Like, sorry about it. And then we had a reception, which was awful because everybody wants to chat and talk and you're just sitting there and everyone feels like, for me at least, everyone's like, I'm so sorry. Blah, blah. And I was like, I just want to leave. I want to leave. So when Adam passed away because of who he was and his situation and how I just truly felt like I did not want anybody having any place in his death that hadn't respected him on some level, even a minute level in his life. So what we did was we had kind of like a viewing slash reception. So there was a room totally separate where we had a video of him playing. I had little Cheerios because that was his favorite thing, little Cheerio boxes on each table, and just little pictures of him scattered at each table. And people could go in that room if they wanted to, and they could share about Adam and they could talk about Adam at the little tables and socialize. And if I wanted to, I could be in the room. And if I didn't want to, I could be in the room. But Adam's, his viewing was open casket. And there was an entry room with stuff to look at of his. And then there was where he was with the casket. And that was where I sat. And at any point, I could shut that door. And I didn't have to. Anybody in there. And I loved it. I loved it because I really felt like this was my time with him to remember him. And if I felt like that wasn't what I wanted, his send-off, his final time on this earth, I was not going to have spent doing anything but reminiscing on the joy that he brought and the person we loved because he was at peace. And one person did show up, and I was extremely cordial because they had reconnected with him, and I had not made amends with how I felt about this person, so I left the room. But they had made amends with Adam, and so I wanted them to at that time, so I left the room. And then I came back, and they left the room. But I just want to encourage you today in sharing my story of grief. If you're looking for ways to process grief, I would say find someone you feel will appreciate that human with you. When you want to find someone that will let you share about them, the angry parts, when you want to find someone like Cindy, who when that person passes away will treat you as if nothing is going on. They won't pity you, and they'll let you come and lay on their couch midday after you've dropped off the kids functionally to get things done, and they will let you lay on the couch and watch Daniel Tiger. Find that teacher that will let you come in the exit of the school so you don't have to see anyone, and drop off your children and take them to their classes so you don't have to interact or talk about it. Be okay with obviously not being okay, but not having to be okay when people want to talk about it and saying, I just can't. And thank you so much. Thank you for your thoughts. I can't. Don't be afraid to remember them. And don't be shamed and guilty for not wanting to commemorate those things. Allow yourself the process. Realize that grief doesn't technically have an endpoint. And I know that's really scary. I really thought, oh, I'll go through the stages of grief and then I'll be done. That's not quite true. But it's okay because there are really great days. Addiction is hard. Losing someone to addiction is hard. Being the person who loves someone in addiction is hard. But however you're navigating that, you're doing your best. cut yourself some slack. Because it is a really hard disease and it overtakes who they are. And grieving who they are when they're alive is just as difficult as grieving who they are when they die. You can wait 20 years for that phone call and never get it. And in that 22nd, 3rd, 5th, 30th year, you get that phone call, it's not going to be any easier. And that's okay too. Knowing you're getting the phone call and expecting the phone call is not the same as getting the phone call. Do not give up hope. And I know this is a really hard one. Do not allow yourself to not have hope if that person that you still love is present, that one day they might make a movement towards healing. And I'm not saying to who they were, I'm not saying to let them back in. I am saying that if you need to feel a little hope and you need to, every day I would pray for Adam and I would say, just a little thought, not even a big prayer, I would say, let today be the day. And it came and it went for years. And there really wasn't a day that today was the day. But there were days that I got a day. So when you get a glimmer of that person, soak it in for what it is. And be aware of what you need. And sometimes it's holding those boundaries. Sometimes it's looking and saying, I'm glad they're doing better, but I can't. I'm still hopeful for them, but this is what I need. This was a really heavy episode, and I really hope that it brought you something today. Addiction can look so different. Sometimes it's not substance. Sometimes it's other things. Sometimes we lose people to addictions that don't even get talked about. But I want to tell you today that I hope it brought you something. And I hope that sharing my story, if you are dealing with addiction, lets you know that you do not need to hide. There is no shame that you need to feel if you want to move towards something. Because if someone came to me and said, I'm struggling, I cannot tell you the way I would leap across rivers and valleys to support you. Okay? So, how we end every episode. Thank you for sharing this with me. Thank you for being here. Thank you for this community, first off. Thank you for allowing me to do this with you, because this heals parts of me too. Getting to share him with you, because this community is someone that I feel will take that snow globe of a memory and really hold it close. So, if no one has told you lately, I love you. I like you just the way you are. I am so happy that you are here. You do not need to change who you are for anyone, because who you are is needed, because there is only one of you. You have exponential and limitless potential. Don't let anyone tell you different. And I'm going to tell you one more time. I love you so much. Until next week, thank you for spending time with me, and I will see you then.